on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, man. How are you?
Good, thanks. It's a late one. We're recording this directly after the Clásico. Real Madrid, Barcelona. Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 2. We'll obviously probably have some admin to start with, but wow.
Well, we also missed the Super Clásico as well.
Yes, we did.
River 2, Boca 3. And there were the FA Cup semi-finals. There were the Women's Champions League semi-final first legs.
Some thrillers in there. There was.
Oh my God, there was so much stuff. Which we're probably not going to be able to cover all of it today. But we're going to do our best. We're going to start with the Clásico. We'll do a bit on the FA Cup semi-finals. Then we'll do a little bit like of a roundup really, really quick. And then we'll get out of here because it's late. Because you are on an early travel thing in the morning.
It's very late in Berlin,
so we'll have to get this done so you can get to bed. Admin, no Writer's House on Tuesday. Writer's House is back on Thursday. You and I will be back on Thursday. Writer's House is back on Friday. You and I will be back on Thursday. I think that's literally all the admin. Let's just get into the football. Should we start at the Bernabeu?
Yes, we have to, I think.
Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 2, a second Clásico winner for Jude Bellingham in a season.
In stoppage time. Unreal.
Barcelona taking a very early lead through Andreas Christensen. Another header. Kind of stunned Real Madrid a little bit.
As did the intensity of Barcelona's start, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought Barcelona were good looking leading up to the goal.
Really good. They were very aggressive. One thing they did was maybe looking at the unfamiliar nature of the back line, they thought, maybe there's some joy to be had from putting pressure on. So they went and they hunted down. This is a theme of the entire game, actually. They hunted down Real Madrid in wide areas. Camavinga was targeted, but also, actually, interesting enough, Modric, because he's a key part of the build-up. So they didn't get much joy out of him, but they got quite a bit out of Lunin. And they won a corner, so they won quite a sort of haphazard piece of defending. Kroos desperately clearing it for a corner, and then the corner that ensued was Christensen's goal. So actually, that entire opening phase, brilliant coaching by Xavi, actually.
I thought they did really well there.
Really, really good, yeah.
But then
yeah, I thought so.
Real Madrid responded really well, though. Kind of slightly.
They did.
Felt like they kind of slightly started taking control of the game.
Yeah, they had that midfield diamonds. They had Valverde at the base, Kroos and Modric as a 2-8, and Bellingham ahead. So what that led to was a very, very precise kind of crossbow approach. They were like, okay, we're going to go right through the middle of them. They had width, don't get me wrong, but their main focus, I think, was we're going to write through the guts of the pitch and trust the technique and touch. And actually, a couple of their openings were really, really impressive. The first half, two or three of the passing moves that they put together deserved goals. They were really, really impressive at certain points in the middle.
But I think their most impressive really player, though, was Lucas Vazquez playing at right back.
Yes.
And gave João Cancelo a torrid time.
Yeah, and you flagged this up. You said that Vazquez would be a great stand-in for Carvajal, who was just, he ran himself into the ground in the Champions League against City. And Vazquez is, look, he's been a really good stand-in at right back and right wing for a while. And he kind of played both in this game. Defensively extremely strong. And it was funny because he gets fouled by Kubasi, for the penalty that Vinicius draws level with, but actually the original sin is the Cancelo.
Yeah, he just kind of just walks.
When he turns, yeah.
Goes past Cancelo.
Knocks it right. You shouldn't be beating it. You shouldn't be doing like a loop the loop on a fullback in that situation.
João Cancelo at fault for definitely the first two.
There was a failure to commit, I think.
Yeah.
There was a failure to commit to challenges, I think, in both cases where a fullback with better defensive instincts, I think, and this is, you could maybe, if I'm being really harsh, say that I've won Bissaka in the semi-final against Coventry. If your instincts are as sharp as they should be, those aren't places where you're getting caught, hey, I think.
Doesn't matter though, mate. They went through. It's fine.
That's true. Listen.
They're going to win the bloody thing. They're going to win the bloody
thing. Actually, we'll get to Coventry in a second. Shout out to Coventry, man. Yeah. You're absolutely, yeah.
Did you think this was a penalty though? Because he goes, that right leg goes looking for it.
Now, here's a funny thing about this. See, I thought, like, this is another thing, but I thought the Grealish moment against Chelsea was a penalty, if the Wan-Bissaka one was a penalty.
Mm.
And by the same token,
yeah, but if
this is a penalty, the Saka one is a penalty.
If we gave out penalties other penalties were given, then...
No, but if we look at bars, I'm not trying to be biased. I'm just saying...
Why don't we use Everton Forest as the bar? Then nothing will ever be a penalty ever again.
Ever be a penalty.
There were penalties are gone. I'm only kidding. I mean, we'll talk about that because I think, I genuinely think one of them was very much kind of like two of them were very much like a kind of see them given, see them or not. This though.
Vasquez sold this very well.
Man, sometimes footballers just go fishing. They go fishing for Kabasi those penalties.
Left the leg. So but think the problem is, Kabasi, look. If you're in the penalty area showing leg, if you're in the penalty area as a defender showing leg, the leg's going to get caught. And this is the thing. I think this is like I said, this is like the Saka thing. You know, everyone agonized over that. I think this is similar. This is absolutely an example of the leg was left out like a trading log, you know, on a forest floor and he took it.
I think this is more seeking contact than the Saka one, right? Because...
Oh, without question.
Because you can surf over that leg. You could just surf.
Look, the Denzel, what's that Denzel Washington meme? I'm leaving here with something. I'm leaving here with something. He went into that box. He went past Cancelo, didn't get his contact, and he saw the Kabasi leg. And Vasquez thought,
to be honest, man, I think that line could sum up Lucas Vasquez's career, though. This is like, I'm leaving here with something. Like, no matter when I'm called out, I'm leaving here with something.
I love him. I love him, actually. I got to say.
He's had an interesting career. I think he's matured. I mean, he's 32 now, right? So it's. He
still looks about 50.
I know, but he kind of was one of those people who managed to escape Walcott's law because I think he got written off as a prospect so young, and like loads of people came in his position that he was never given that.
And one of the great dressing room survivors.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you don't hang around that Real Madrid squad unless, you know, play for that many managers and win that much unless you're reliable.
Totally.
Yeah, he's just matured into quite a steady right back because he actually fits like the brief for a modern right back, you know, because he's very quick. He does. Forward, he does. He's quite like good.
It's like the right back role evolved into him. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, he won the penalty for the first. I am one of those, like, I thought first Clasico, I think, for this referee. Potentially could go to VAR. I was just like, he's definitely over. If this goes to VAR, he's 100% overruling it. Do you know what I mean? It was just one of those, like.
Right.
Joe would have overruled it. Laos.
Who's that?
Laos would have overruled it.
Laos would have loved it. Laos, absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
So they draw level. It's a really good penalty from Vinicius.
It is. Yeah.
Who obviously, you know, he's the man from the spot.
He had a curious game, Vinicius, I think.
He did, actually. It was interesting seeing sort of the celebrations and Vinicius basically on the sidelines for that. But then this is the thing about Real Madrid, like, they don't care who gets the job done.
He was in it. Him and Carvajal were like going, they were like down behind the goal as well. They actually like went and
right, but he was subbed off by that point. Yeah, it was funny just seeing, it was funny like seeing Madrid just doing whatever it takes to win.
Yeah, I mean, he so did. They draw level. Yeah, he did look a bit tired when he came off, I think. He was.
Dude, they look spent, man. The midweek as well.
He might have like,
we've got to like factor that
in. The amount of counterattacks they had as well. They just felt like he'd run himself into the ground.
Yeah, they were tired legs. They were to be fair to Real Madrid, they were tired legs. You saw it in the City game as well against Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Like, there were passes that players were playing that were not. There were passes they were playing that like fully fit players don't play. It was interesting to see Modric getting caught. I don't think fitness is the issue for him. It was funny how they, in the best way, were a bit disrespectful. The pressure that was applied to him. You saw Frenkie de Jong nipping at him early. And I thought Frenkie de Jong was really good. He went off with an injury. I thought he was really good.
That's the injury as well.
He took the ball in really difficult areas, played the ball out nicely. And we kind of saw, you know, we talked about Frenkie de Jong having the keys to the midfield. We talked about it forever. But what I loved about him in this game was the way he took real responsibility in difficult areas, tight spaces. Same with Gundogan. I thought they played some really good stuff. And Lamine Yamal was, you talk about a torrid time, like, man, Lamine Yamal went at Camavinga with a vengeance, actually. I thought him and Vasquez were the two best players on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is, it's wild. And can I say this as well? There was a funny thing about Rafinha. Rafinha, you know, creatively extremely gifted, but very much on a journey in this game. But within Rafinha was this funny thing of like getting the ball. There's one moment in the first half, I think, summed up his performance. Stunning piece of control, looks up, rips the ball out of play. Like,
get you a guy who can do both, is that what you're saying?
You get you like, absolutely. Whereas I think Lamine Yamal, the timing, the touch, the movement was like, Camavinga's a very good defender. Mm. Like, I know he's a standing left back, but it takes a very, very good winger to give him the kind of problems that Yamal gave him. Like, he really, really...
There was a moment in the second half where Lamine Yamal absolutely bollocked Robert Lewandowski for not giving him the ball. And I was just like, oh!
I love this. I love this. I love... Because there are a lot of young players in that pitch, actually. Obviously, Kubasi, Yamal, then the subs coming. And so, Frenkie de Jong, as mentioned, like, went off at the half. It's a real shame, that collision with Valverde. And he looked in a bad way. I hope he's going to be okay.
Christensen went off as
well. The changes came in. Yeah, and then Fermin Lopez came into the action. It was super weird when he scored. Super weird when he scored to put Barca ahead, because it was like, it's obviously going to be silent, but because it was so quiet, I thought it was offside almost.
Yeah, well, Ferran Torres runs across, that, right?
Yep. Whips the ball, and Ferran Torres goes and do this kind of back heel, which is it's a finish that's become very popular, but it's of a
you gotta connect.
Mixed application, shall we say. How do I say this? Charitably. Actually, no, if you've got nothing good to say, don't say it at all. So
if someone randomly, like when you're walking down the street, just starts doing parkour and they don't land it, that's kind of what that is. You're a bit like, man, if you're going to go there, you kind of need to stick the landing, you know?
Thank you. Listen, if you're not Sebastian Foucault, should you be freestyling? Freestyling parkour?
But also, he was like, he kind of like bounced across in front of Lunin, and I was convinced he was offside.
Yeah.
I was convinced he was offside, and Lunin.
And maybe that sort of missing, it's the distraction, because Lunin then sort of spoons it out to Fermin Lopez, who slots it in, and then it's 2-1. And at that point, Barca weren't in control, but they were certainly like pugnacious, and they felt like they'd worked stuff out.
I think they played quite well in this game, I'm not going to lie, Barca. I think they were quite good.
They did. I really liked a lot of what they did in this game. They took advantage of Real Madrid's, I think, more unfamiliar setup. They took advantage of the fact that Tchouaméni, Rudiger, and the build-up. They took advantage of that hesitancy to really attack. And I thought they deserved a bit more. Mm. And then Vasquez putting them back into it 4 minutes later. That was crucial to get that goal back so quick, actually. It was really crucial. And in all this time, by the way, in the middle of all of this, Bellingham, who obviously becomes a factor later, not actually that influential.
Same as the first game.
Same, frankly, as the game midweek. And there have been comparisons between Bellingham and Zidane, and they're really fair. They're fair in terms of the way that he comes into games. He's out of games for certain periods. Like we've seen in dominant games, that's not, you know, that's, we have seen dominant games, but other games where he's on the fringe of the action for whatever reason, could be the tactical setup, could be his own movement, his own intensity, or whatever it might be. But the ability to seize the moment is extraordinary. So the Vasquez equalizer basically leads Real Madrid into the closing stages where it's fairly even still. It really is fairly even, but Vasquez, who just seemed to be able to play, I think the man could have played for another hour.
Joao Cancelo should have been more switched onto that though. That's like
for the final one.
For the Lucas Vasquez goal. Because it's like, just, you kind of need to just be aware to the danger, go to the ball, get that out of play for a corner, like send that out for a corner.
Right.
And
right.
I think it's been a problem for Barca at left back. I think that we've seen probably some, you know, some of the traits that maybe Pep felt comfortable letting him go. He didn't really massively impress at Bayern. He had moments, but he will always have moments, Joao Cancelo, because he is fundamentally a player that has real quality. It's just the consistency in what Barca need at the moment. If you look at the players who are really developing and really contributing in like large, like consistently, it's a lot of the younger guys. Now, a lot of will depend on like how quickly Balde recovers from his injury. It's been a long one. He's only a young player. But that will be, to sign him permanently will be a massively costly thing for Barca.
Mm. But Pep did that thing that he always does when he decides almost mid-season he wants something completely different. And he decided, actually, no, I want primarily ball-playing defenders. And I don't want anyone that can't defend. That's your primary responsibility. At the moment that happened, it wasn't, I mean, it was almost like Pep weighed up. But like he just went for that thing where he was like, everyone in my back line, my back five are going to be all excellent one-to-one defenders. All of them going to be excellent one-on-one defenders. And the moment he made that decision, it's like when Pep realised that he wanted wingers that came inside. And I know Sané wanted to go back to Bayern, but at that point, Sané's game wasn't really a left winger that came inside. And the moment Pep decided he wanted something else, it was curtains. So I think you're right. And also, but Pep was ahead of the curve with that stuff. Like it was, people do hunt you down. Like, you know, even the, you know, Camavinga, brilliant player. And also, when Alphonso Davies arrives, and there is a good defender in Alphonso Davies. He's just stagnated a bit. He is still
got that injury as well,
at his best when he's when he's on it. But then you see actually in this game the Cancelo struggle, and you see the importance of the fullback that can just really do that work, because Vasquez just cooked him. And at a time too, like four, they scored only 4 minutes after.
Yeah, that was such a bad goal. They didn't even, for Barca to concede.
And the sad thing was as well, Barca were actually like, Pedri came in and did well, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Pedri came to difficult context, you know, maybe fitness is an issue for him, but he came in place of Frenkie de Jong and just, you know, even from his body language, the moment he came on, he just looked like the part. And that goal for Barca, man, it's frustrating because they came into that stadium and at certain points, they looked like the home team. They were making Real counter them. So then, you know, Vasquez scores. And you get into the late stages and then, you know, Bellingham doing what Bellingham does. There was one moment when the ball gets across the cross before the goal, a few minutes before, and Bellingham comes, it doesn't quite get good, and Joselu comes in and doesn't get good contact. And you just saw that moment, the sort of flash of irritation from Bellingham, because he's like, this is a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And weirdly enough, I thought it was kind of done at that point. I didn't think that Real would get another moment, but of course they did. And the interesting thing about this goal is, so it gets flashed across the box and Joselu, I think, leaves it. I think he leaves it because I think he knows that Bellingham's cutting.
And it does everyone.
The finish itself, the finish is really good. It does everyone, you're right. Because Koundé's coming in and if he goes low, it's not in.
Someone else who I thought had a good game, actually. Jules Koundé.
He did, actually, yeah. Very good. Yeah, yeah. Watching him square off Vinicius's journey, is quite funny.
Watching him Meg Vinicius go back towards his own goal was quite fun.
Can I say, it's always funny to see who comes in as peacemaker. And I was like, of course, Valverde is there. Valverde bursty coming in from out of shot to make the peace.
Valverde coming in two-footed and said, I swear I heard Sergio Ramos somewhere. Like, Sergio Ramos somewhere. I just heard him. He told me to do it.
It's very, very funny when Valverde, someone like him, arrives in the scene. It's always interesting to see who wants to be held back the moment he
arrives. It's like Granit Xhaka in the Dortmund Leverkusen game. Victor Boniface gets shown a straight red, goes to VAR, and the red is overturned, and Granit Xhaka gets a yellow.
We've got to book someone.
Just see. But no. And then Jacka tries to do this whole thing, being like, I was trying to like save him. And I was like, fuck, come on, Granite. We see this movie.
Come on, listen. You're doing it for old time's sake. We see this.
We'll talk about that. That was a proper old scuffle, though. Schlotterbeck was on the deck twice.
That's wild.
Anyway.
Well, so were Leverkusen on the deck, but they came back. Anyway, another story. But yeah, so then, and then Bellingham coming in at the far post, and almost like, you know, we always say he resembles a different great in each incarnation. This was shades of a Michael Owen finish here. Like,
oh,
just ripping that high into the net. Like, it's a really good, there will be the memes. The Bellingham tap and merchant memes are going to be enforced because he finished from a small distance.
This was a difficult finish.
Dude, it was a difficult, yeah. I mean, the haters will say that, but the finish was excellent.
There's something very aesthetically pleasing when like you're already sliding on your knees as the ball's going in.
Right, yeah. You
know? Apart from if you're Marc-Andre ter Stegen, which is like, he also was on his knees and it was just, that wasn't great.
Who concedes very few goals. Actually, this is the thing as well, like in terms of goals in open play, he'd not conceded one in like, what, 10 hours of league football?
Oh, really? What's today?
Yeah. So then this, you know, they go on and win, and then Bellingham goes and does the celebration. He does a dance with Vasquez, and I was like, when did he develop that? This is interesting. But now here's the thing about Bellingham, because we were talking in the chat and Mayo was saying like he hopes Bellingham avoids injury, and I thought the wild thing about Bellingham's first season, right, he's virtually won them the league already. Mm-hmm. If Bellingham retired, like, you know, obviously no injury won't, but if Bellingham literally retired in this season, he would virtually be a Real Madrid legend. Like what he has done. It's so weird. It sounds ridiculous to say that, but he has scored stoppage time winner in his first two league Clasicos. He's been part of a team, central part of a team that's defeated Manchester City over two legs, defending Champions League like holders.
Mm-hmm.
And he's put them 11 points clear in the league with six games to play. And in the head to head, they're ahead of Barca because they've won both. Mm-hmm.
I mean they've won. The league's done. The league was done for a while, but
he scored, what, 17 goals in La Liga. Yeah, unreal. I just love the way that he took responsibility in this game, like same as ever. And they just get the job done, Madrid.
There's something with Jude that kind of kicks in where like he has the ability to really like just grab the game by the scruff of the neck.
Mm.
I feel like he, early on in the season, he was doing it consistently throughout all games, but I think that was just a little bit of like, I'm here. Oh my God, isn't this going so well? I'm like scoring all these goals. And I think that as the season's gone on, I think he's started to pick and choose his moments a little bit better.
Mm.
And because I remember like the first Clasico, everyone was just like, he wasn't actually that good. And then, but he scored those two goals that were unbelievable. And, it was like, oh, but what can you say? But before that, he'd been putting in all these really good performances. And I think when he had that knock, since then, I think he's been not managing his influence, but I feel like just picking and choosing when he actually like goes into like, right, give me the ball.
Of off the cuff, Ancelotti said the style of playing, like the off the cuff style, it's about sensing, you know, we joke about this, like Modric crossing the halfway line is when they're like, you know, it's when the horror movie music starts playing. And there's a thing when Bellingham, the shoulders come out and he looks up and there's 5 minutes to go and the game's equal and then he's hunting for space. Mm. And it happens so often. It's the Madrid thing. Like, you know, Bellingham's basically Real Madrid made flesh because it's the, you know, he's the spirit of Real Madrid made flesh because he doesn't care when the goals come, how it looks, how he's played prior to that moment. But what Madrid is so good at doing, and Bellingham too, is uniquely understanding when the moment is there. And it happens so often, it's not a fluke, actually.
Mm.
It happens so often, it's not a fluke. In fact, I would equate it to, if you ever watched a lot of like Pete Sampras, okay, and Pete Sampras wouldn't necessarily win like, you know, 6-love, 6-love, 6-love. He'd win like 6-4, 6-4, 6-4, but he would know exactly when to break serve. He would know exactly, he'd get to a 4-all, he'd be like, oh my God, this guy's actually like going at Sampras, and Sampras would then just like, okay, I'm going to take you now, I'm going to take your serve now. 7-6, 6-4, 6-4, and that was it. And he would lose being like, I thought I was good. But there are people that get beaten by Madrid, and there are people that got beaten by Sampras, who to this day were like, I swore I had him. I swore I had Madrid. I swore they were right there. And you didn't have them. You didn't, because they were waiting for you to lose that half step, to lose your balance, to fail to pick somebody up, and there he was. Look at when Madrid won that Champions League in 22. There are people still, even like a year later, going, I don't know how they did it. There were literally people like trying to break down what happened tactically, going, it's a fluke, it's luck. And they were like, no, it's really not, actually. And you rewatch enough of those games and you see the gaps they were playing through. What they were doing was they were taking astonishing amounts of risk, knowing they were outmatched physically in some areas, not technically because they're Madrid, no one's outmatched them technically, but in certain areas they were like, we're physically overmatched. We don't have the goal volume. This is a team that does not have, you know, I look at me talking about Rodrigo and a volume goal scorer. Goals have been a problem for Madrid. This is the thing. They don't have a vast amount. If they got Rodrigo or Vinicius injured, they don't have a deep well to pick on. They don't have a really good fourth, fifth backup, but somehow they get the damn thing done.
They've got quite like a decent spread though, right? Because you've got like, you got Jude Bellingham, you got Vinicius, you got Rodrigo, but then you got Kostelu, and then you've got a few people just chipping in, like Bram Diaz.
That's what I mean, but none of that. That's on point. Prior to the season, you wouldn't have
that. You wouldn't have banked on that.
This is incredible. This is why I'm so impressed by the coaching from Ancelotti, but also credit to the players. Like, look at Valverde playing DM. You know he'd not complain for a second, even though he knew he'd be up against the running of Gundogan and De Jong, like difficult movement, very elusive, Lamine Yamal breaking. They put him in a very difficult position. They put Valverde in an unfamiliar position, or not unfamiliar, but one that he wouldn't be his priority, in front of an unfamiliar or, well, not the most established centre-back partnership. They put Valverde in that position, and you can guarantee the man didn't complain. That's what makes them as impressive. And I know I praise them plenty in this podcast, but the adjustments they make, when you think of like other, not to name names, but other managers in other leagues that constantly complain about not having all their players available. And you look at the pack that Real shuffle, they do have elite players, but they have elite players playing in positions that are just not theirs. Tchouaméni is not a centre-back. Every now and again, he'll do something when you're like, oh my God, this reminds you he's not centre-back. For example, it might be the reaction time on the Fermín López goal, when neither of them in the centre-back role, maybe Tchouaméni in particular, they don't react like centre-backs might in that situation where they're not that quick to the ball. You might say that. Fundamentally, I don't know, man, there's something really impressive about players that just do whatever it takes to make it happen.
Do you know who didn't do everything it takes to make it happen?
Who's that?
Atleti. They lost to Alaves 2-0. And Girona beating Cadiz 4-1 means that they've opened up a 7-point gap on Atleti in third. Atleti in fourth, 3 points clear of Athletic Club for a Champions League spot.
Wow.
And next week, Atleti against Athletic at the Metropolitano.
Huge.
27th of April. That's next Saturday night. So that's a massive, massive game.
And the goal difference for Athletic Club is a goal up as well. That's
and they drew this
crunch.
They drew on Friday with Granada. Real Sociedad drawing away at Getafe. Good win for Betis though, away at Valencia this weekend as well. So La Liga, even though the league's done, I think the kind of European, I think Girona are good for Champions League, but which is absolutely wild, by the way. But I reckon the final Champions League spot in the European races are very, very fun indeed. Just quickly, we shouted it out, but let's shout it out again. Dortmund 1, Bayer Leverkusen 1 in the Bundesliga.
Unreal.
Dortmund taking a quite a late lead, actually. It was, 80th minute or something? It was
81.
Such a good goal, this. Julian Brandt's touch in this goal in the lead up to it is so good. And then crossed in for Füllkrug. Great goal by Füllkrug.
Rips it.
And you thought, wow, is that going to be it? Is that going
to
be it?
Well, it had to be that. It was. It was because Grimaldo has a really good free kick, turn around. And you're like, okay, that's it. That's the last chance.
No.
And Florian Wirtz, second half sub, comes on, floats it in, and then we get the equaliser. I mean, it's just...
From Josip Stanisic
equalising. Stanisic equalising.
90+7.
It's ridiculous.
It's got so many
and the
goals.
The look on Xabi Alonso's face, he's like, this season is just, it feels like witchcraft. Like, look, here's the thing. There's four games to go. You could argue this was as tough a game in the running Dortmund, you know, at Dortmund, just off the back of that brilliant win over Atleti in the Champions League. And you don't want to jinx it, but goodness. I mean, there's the Frankfurt. Who have they got left? They've got Stuttgart. That's tough. Stuttgart, Frankfurt.
Hey, Stuttgart lost this weekend, though.
And Augsburg.
Away at Bremen. So.
Yeah, but I mean, it looked good size. Yeah, true, true. But a surprising defeat. But still, those four games, there's an exceptional chance to go unbeaten in the league season. I mean, we'll not get carried away with the Europa League because Roma are a very good team and it's the semi, so, you know, can't get complacent, but certainly a chance to go unbeaten in the league. So it's thrilling.
It really is. And there's also a massive game next week in the Bundesliga on Saturday as well, where Dortmund go to Leipzig. Dortmund just 2 points behind Leipzig for the final Champions League spot. Although that defeat for Stuttgart means that it's not quite as done as they would like it to be. 4 points on Leipzig, 6 points on Dortmund, 4 to play. Bayern are standalone in second at the moment. They beat Union 5-1 at Union on Saturday.
They're still in a bit of trouble, Union. Still in a bit of trouble.
They are. I just think that they'll should be okay. I can't really see them dragged in. Are you saying that?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Look what they've got. They've got Bochum, Gladbach, Köln, Freiburg. Those aren't, dude, those are not...
No easy games in the Bundesliga,
they're not easy. Not easy, yeah.
No easy games in this Farmers
League. Dogfight with Bochum. That's interesting. That's one to watch for sure.
Quick shout out to the Women's Champions League. Chelsea beating Barcelona 1-0 in Barcelona. That's a massive result for them. Aaron Cuthbert's goal, the only goal of the game. Lyon, meanwhile, 3-2 against PSG in Lyon. It was great this weekend. We had Lyon-PSG facing off in the men's and women's. Champions League in the women's.
Lyon's had a banger in this. Yes. Came back from 2-0 down, and each goal was maybe ascending order of brilliance. Maybe the Lyon's equaliser was sensational, but the third one, just the turn and finish. This is a great game.
Yeah, 3 goals in 6 minutes.
Yeah, and like the goals even arrived. The first goal arrived like in the second half, actually. This was in the Lyon-PSG game, but what a contrast with the Barcelona-Chelsea game, which was like tight. Mm. There was maybe the best Barcelona chance was the Paraluelo one with 5 minutes to go. It was 1-0 Chelsea, but Ramirez really could have scored, should have scored maybe a second. I mean, it feels like nitpicking when a team has gone away and done what Chelsea did to Barcelona. It felt like they'd really done the homework and just closed all the spaces really, really well. They really compressed. So yeah, Emma Hayes with the swan song.
Yeah, mentioned Lyon PSG there. PSG beating Lyon in Ligue 1, 4-1.
Mm.
PSG with 3-0 up in half an hour and it was kind of done. Monaco beat Brest in a massive game to go second, and Lille's win against Strasbourg has closed the gap on Brest to just a point. PSG are 11 points clear with 9 to play in Ligue 1. Let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Should we do the FA Cup?
Yeah, we have to.
Manchester United getting past Coventry on a penalty shootout. 3-3 in normal time. Manchester United with 3-0 up after 58 minutes. Scott McTominay, Harry Maguire giving United a 2-0 lead at half time. Bruno Fernandes just before the hour mark. Looked like he'd put the game to bed for Manchester United.
He did. And like there was even some... dare I say, I was going to say there was some good game management. There was just watching them in the first half in particular, United making moves and then just killing tempo, and in quite a mature way, I thought. The first half, some of United's play, till they did to McTominay, and can I just say McTominay, talk about a footballer that has absolutely made himself available in all the best ways for United in terms of his effort, in terms of his movement. This is someone that's maximised his ability, the tools at his disposal. I just wish that every player in this squad did that to the same extent. McTominay with a really good open, a great finish from close range. And then for the 20 minutes until the end of the first half, United actually not bombing forward, but really picking their poison, really being careful. And I really liked the way they managed the first half. Maguire got their header. And at 2-0, I thought, this is just like, I've taken all the drama out of this game.
Dude, little did I know, of course. The third one went in, I switched over to watch Fulham Liverpool. And then I was just like, I checked the score and it was 3-2. And I was just like, what the hell? Went back to the game, caught the last 5 minutes.
And this is the thing really with Coventry in this game, like they looked done. They looked done at 3-0, and I'm not going to lie, I felt it was done. And even the concession, even the deflected goal by Bruno, I thought it almost felt like they were unlucky too. It felt like it was not going to happen for them in any form. And this will sound super patronising. I'm glad it's frustrating as hell, but it's still better to lose 4-2 on penalties, 3-3 draw, than to go out 3-0 after the incredible campaign they've had. I still think it's better, like as heartbreaking as it will be for them in the immediate aftermath. I just want to give some shout outs to a couple of players. I loved Callum O'Hare coming on as a sub against Wolves. I loved him starting in this game. I think, you know, Sims is irrepressible, like his touch, his movement, even the fact, not the cleanest contact for his goal, but just the way that he always is finding space. I loved his movement for this goal. And then the deflection, it was funny because Wan-Bissaka went a bit of a journey, because Wan-Bissaka, Hare steps up, hits the strike, Wan-Bissaka turns, deflects, and then Onana just has no chance with it. I thought the penalty was actually kind of unlucky. If you consider, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to think. It's that thing of like, it's hard to think what else Wan-Bissaka can do with his arm when the ball comes in like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I just didn't know what he was meant to do in that situation.
That's one of those that, like, any handball decision now, it's kind of, you just don't really know if it's going to be a handball or not. The first goal, though, I was going to say, and Sims just kind of just had, like, so much space where, like, Casemiro was looking around being like, do I go? But before that, apart from the couple of times when commentary broke through, I actually think he did okay in the first half at centre-back.
No, he did, but there's a problem. The problem is, I mean, this doesn't sound really mean. There's a couple of moments he did okay, but this is the strange thing of, you know when Nicholas Jackson scored that hat-trick against Spurs, and actually it felt like his reputation went sideways because people were that critical for whatever reason. It feels like this weird thing where Ten Hag is in a strange position where he's gone to the final of an FA Cup, but his position is weaker than it was before the game. Like,
listen,
it sounds
Manchester
so
United
weird,
are but, in. We've talked about this. The Chelsea-Man United game a couple of weeks ago, and this is the thing about Manchester United at the moment, is that they are consistently playing in games that no matter who wins, there aren't really any winners.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got to give a credit to Bruno for his post-match interview, because he was like a bit despondent almost. He was like, this is not good enough. Like, this isn't the standard. Like, we get to an FA Cup final, yeah. And I don't think he was trying to belittle Coventry in terms of the quality of what they did. It wasn't that. It was more like, we didn't assert match control. Like,
you were 3-0 up against a side that's not even in the playoff spots in the championship. That's the diff. Like,
you're 3-0 up. You're 3-0 up. You just play keep ball for the last 20 minutes or half hour. You just do that. Like, you're making these big changes. You're taking off Garnacho and Kobbie Mainoo for whatever reason, and you're inviting pressure. You're inviting needless pressure. And it's a real problem for them. And
Ten Hag subs, man.
Can I say this?
Ten Hag subs would be a great FPL name.
Dude. So just to give credit, before we get back too much into United and the kind of, you know, debrief, because they did ultimately win this game, Hadji Wright as well. We saw him pop up with the late heroics against Wolves, and this penalty.
Wow.
Look, man, like this Coventry team, they did some legendary things. Ben Sheaf as well, brilliant. Like, they all went on that journey. Like, they all, and they didn't, you can say for the way that United played in the first hour, they ultimately deserve to edge this game. I don't know. I think the team that finishes stronger in a cup game, the team that finishes stronger is the team that deserves it. On that, you know, on that note, I mean, you look at the kind of the disallowed goal. I think, was it right that crosses it? The problem is he's just, it's inches.
Spiritually onside.
Someone even said in one of the chats, someone said spiritually onside.
It was spiritually onside. Like,
hang on a minute.
Spiritually onside.
It was.
Like, it was absolutely spiritually onside.
Yeah,
and actually, yeah, there are a few, there were a few people, like, I don't know whether it went mainstream or what, but like, you know, a few people said it was spiritually onside, were tweeting us about it. John McKenzie wrote there should be moral tolerances built into VAR so that if you deserve moral to lose, so that amazing. If you deserve to lose, then your offside line moves back by an inch.
Incredible. No, I love it. I love it. But it was a heartbreaker for Coventry because they'd literally done all that work.
No.
They've done all that work, and I don't know. Look, I'm a United fan, and also as a football fan, I was just like, because these players aren't coming back here. They're not coming. Those Coventry players, you know, they're not coming back here as a group. This is the thing. Like, teams like United and City, they'll be back in the quarterfinals every other year at least. But Coventry, the run they went on, the way they came through everything, Maidstone, the giant killers, they handled them. They handled Wolves. All of it, the football they played, the spirit they showed, not just the spirit, that's patronising, the technique, the quality, the ball playing, the intensity, the inventiveness. And it's just, it's absolutely gutting that it ends for them like this. Mm. Truly. Because this is their moment. I mean, I don't normally like Wembley semi-finals, but the only reason I do like them is because at least Coventry got to taste that stage, which they deserved, the way they played this year. Absolutely. I'm really, obviously as a United fan, delighted for United, but and like even especially the young players like Kobbie Mainoo and Højlund, who scored a decisive penalty.
No one went to celebrate
the
start with him.
Højlund's had.
You see that? He turned around. And he's like, guys, no. Guys,
hello, like Travolta. Like,
I could have sworn I just scored the winning penalty in the FA Cup semi final. Hey, we were talking about it, weren't we? Saying that for Sir Jim Ratcliffe, like, you know, you're down bad when you've literally ran a marathon. And it's not the most exhausting thing you've done that day.
Oh my God, yeah. He looked like thunder. At the start of extra time, he looked like thunder.
There's a big like how it started, how it's going moment. At 3-0 right, and then 3-3.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's fair enough.
I mean, at the end of the day though, man, you can't, another cup final, another FA Cup final.
Mm. Yes.
It sets up a Manchester derby. On the FA Cup, actually, obviously the changes were made this week with the removal of replays from the first round on, which has not gone down well with the Football League clubs, understandably.
Rightly so.
I think you and I wanted to talk about this, but we wanted to do it maybe as a bit of a part of a wider episode. And I was thinking maybe we could save it for after the season's done, or if we get a quiet week, a quiet Thursday one, because I think it relates to the expansion of international football. And by international football, I also include in that, like, this club championship, world club championship. The replay side of it, I think, is a really, I think it's a bad idea, but I think there are solutions that they could have done to have maybe eased that a bit that I just don't think they've taken into consideration. Like, for example, one thing that we were talking about, and we will save this, but just to, you know, like, because we feel that, for example, the thing that we love about the DFB Pokal is that the lowest ranked side, it gets the game at home.
Right, exactly. Saarbrücken, look how amazing that run was.
Saarbrücken had all of these Bundesliga teams come to town. But this comes from just now there are just kind of there's no time really to play all of this football. And
there's not.
Clubs that suffer the most from the knock-on effects of that are the teams lower down the pyramid, because those competitions are still such a massive deal for them.
But we said it even when even big clubs start complaining, when even players like Bernardo Silva, who've got like a massive engine, when even they start talking about being knackered, and look, they're City, they're not people's natural first in line for sympathy. Don't get me, I'm not saying they are. All of what I am saying is when Pep was talking about this, I was like, no, but he's right.
Yeah, that's the thing. Pep is right. I mean,
Pep was talking about it, and it was like, oh, it's Pep, it's City. Like, yes, they are City, they are complaining, and also Pep is right. They literally had that game, late finish on Wednesday night, and they're playing an FA Cup semi-final on the Saturday. We've got Thursday to recover. What is that? I don't even know what kind of process you go through mentally and physically to recover from that. What, ice bath, light training, if that, and then you've got one day of training, and then that's it. You're into a semi-final.
And a lot of people pull up
it deletes the competition.
Yeah, a lot of people pull up the kind of like, oh, well, why'd you go on these tours in preseason? It's like you're seeing teams now doing like three games in preseason, but they're training as well. So it's a different thing. Like, yeah. I get it. I still don't necessarily think it's great for players to be traveling that far in preseason.
No, me neither.
But
me neither.
That's by the by. That's not like four games in 10 days or something like that, you know, at this part of the season.
Also, like, this is like the muscle fatigue is kicking in. It's a long season, played at high intensity. And I saw the interview and I was like, no, Pep's right though.
But this is the thing, like, that is as true as how like important a lot of this stuff is to the pyramid. Now, I think like we're also kind of in a bit of a bad place, and yes, we will actually, we should put a pin in this because otherwise we'll end up talking about it for ages. But we're in a bit of a bad place where the football finances aren't trickling down anywhere near enough to the point where replays are essential for a lot of these clubs to survive or like generate extra income. And it's again, another case of football highlighting a valid problem just with a completely terrible solution.
Can I say this then? Actually, can I say this then? This is maybe a challenge for City and other big clubs. You've got to fight for the whole thing.
They won't do it. They don't care. They won't.
And this is the problem. The problem is ultimately, then it becomes difficult to generate sympathy for having players knackered and playing loose passes and affecting the spectacle, because then ultimately it just seems like self-interest. And, and maybe it is. Maybe it's just self-interest.
I mean, we will talk about this another time. I promise. Let's move on. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that that isn't something that we're just kind of scooting over, because I think you and I were texting about this, being like, I think it's time for one of those episodes again soon where we're just like, do you know what they should do? Yeah,
absolutely. Against modern football. Against modern football.
Make it woke. That's what they need to do. The woke cola cup. But that's the leak. Oh my God, woke cola.
Woke. Get out of here.
No? All right. Let's go to the other semi-final. City going through against Chelsea. Chelsea, curiously.
Dude, they had this.
Dude, Chelsea. The biggest matchup problem for City consistently this season?
Yes. Weirdly, I don't get
so
it.
So weird, right?
Is it because they're just amorphous? You don't know what's going to come out of them at any one time. Like, maybe it's just they're impossible to plan for because they're so chaotic. What I'll say about this, though, is Nicholas Jackson. Oh. Hey, look. These opportunities, how do I say this? He didn't seize the moment. Like, you had those two particular chances, I would say. The first half and the second half, he's through on goal and tries to go around the keeper, where a confident striker would have slotted it. The second half, he nods it down into the ground and Ortega saves. And both of those finishes betrayed a lack of confidence. A real lack of confidence. Like, and we saw this from Chelsea in the Carabao Cup final, unfortunately. Mm. We saw the same thing. We just saw, you can ascribe it to youth, you can ascribe it to players who are not accustomed to that level. Because, you know, again, Nicholas Jackson has been kind of, he's been promoted fast. This is a guy that was, you know, decent goal return for Villarreal. And all of a sudden, this level of pressure in just a year's time, like, it's a fast, fast, fast upgrade. If you look at someone like Chukwueze, who's been brilliant on the counterattack for Villarreal, who goes to Milan and is allowed to ease into it, he's not been the main man in the way that Nicholas Jackson's expected to be. And then it's a weird thing as a striker, because you go in there and you're meant to seize the moment and you're given all this responsibility. But, you know, very few can deliver. You saw Jovic. We've seen it before. You've seen so many leagues like Yuka Jovic going from Eintracht, you know, brilliant player, underdog team, goes to Real, and it just never works out. And I worry that it was a step too far too soon for Jackson, because Chelsea created opportunities that really they should have taken. And then even as well, the Grealish moment. So we talk about this as well, the Grealish handball, potentially for the penalty from the Cole Palmer free kick.
I thought that was a handball.
I thought so.
Yeah, I thought that was a penalty.
I thought they were fortunate. And even Chelsea and City in this game as well, in terms of fortunate, De Bruyne played a couple of passes. You saw that those are tired passes. Mm. You saw a couple of things that City did in this game. Dragged finishes, lacks of certainty. Even when Foden went around the keeper, you just thought a fully sharp Foden scores that when he goes around the keeper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't have it. There's a split second more decisiveness. And this is not a knock on Foden. It's more like, I can totally understand why players for City looked like they were physically in third gear in this game. But Bernardo Silva, if anyone's going to pop up with a goal to kind of make himself feel better this week, it was Bernardo Silva, who continued his streak of scoring deflected strikes in FA Cup games. He loves a deflected goal in the FA Cup with a late winner. He'd had a tough week after the penalty. And actually, credit to him, because he missed that one in midweek. And he was quite frank. He was like, no, it wasn't a delay that put me off. I was going to go in the middle regardless against Lunin. That was his thing. He was like, Lunin was going early. I'm going down the middle. It happens. Which I thought was pretty like...
He can be quite...
The thing I like about Bernardo Silva... Yeah, he's pretty good and straightforward. And City bounced back. They're in the cup final. And now it's so strange. They could end up with a double-double. But because of losing to Madrid, despite being, I think, tactically or superior in terms of possession, it would be a weirdly muted outcome somehow, I think.
You think?
Just because I don't know if it's...
I think if they win the league, I think if they win the league, it'll feel
it's
like...
It's huge to win four straight.
One. Yeah. And also because it's
like
the
Champions
fact that,
League
like,
is there.
And I think also because it's been like a genuine, you know, I think it's
a real title.
Yeah, like
three
teams in it.
That's fair. But still like a very good season. What, like FA Cup final, Premier League, should still win the league, I think.
Stay on. Long way to go.
So they're just trying to manage expectations.
Well, manage your own expectations.
We don't.
Yeah.
Well, don't manage your own expectations.
Listen,
sorry.
I'm an adult. Let me manage my own expectations.
When you accept mediocrity for yourself, you accept it for others.
Leave me out of your, I don't know, whatever it is you lot do. Whatever you lot are smoking over there, Old Trafford.
three-quarter life crisis.
What are they smoking over there at Old Trafford?
Yeah, my apologies. There's still plenty.
I love you, but you're on your own. You had the good years.
That's true. I'm not saying this from a place of bitterness. I'm not saying it at all.
I know.
It's more that City with that, they're in a place now where they're probably still best place to take this. It's just, I don't know, we'll remain to be seen how they recover from the elimination of the Champions League.
I think it's also a massive week in the league. This is probably the most pivotal 7 days now until the rest of the season, right? Because you've got Arsenal and Liverpool both winning on the weekend, quite businesslike in the end. I think Arsenal were pretty decent against Wolves. And to be fair,
yes.
Wolves were like just so threadbare, and actually did still cause Arsenal a couple of issues. But you know, Arsenal play again against Chelsea on Tuesday, and if they win that, yes, they've played two games more than City, but they'll be 4 points ahead of them. And before City go to Brighton, and that just makes though, you know, tired legs in games that you have to win just a little bit more tricky. I mean, right. City might come through, and then, I mean, Arsenal might not beat Chelsea. Arsenal might then go and lose to Spurs on the weekend, who are also kind of trying to put pressure on Villa, who, you know, beat Bournemouth 3-1.
Good win that.
And like, it's all a bit just, there's no wiggle room anymore at all.
None at all. Yeah.
And I mean, especially if you look at the teams down the table, like, Sheffield United losing 4-1 to Burnley on the weekend, which was, that's a bad result for Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And then Luton losing 5-1 to Brentford, I think is also at home, is also another really, really disappointing result. It didn't matter too much for them, I think, because of the Forest result against Everton. Everton winning 2-0. What do you think about this? Are we going to talk about the, I mean, Forest were so incensed about decisions that they released a statement, accusing pretty loaded language.
I'm wary of giving that too much. And also, like, Forest had their opportunities to have made more out of it, I think. Like Gibbs White in particular. So, and this is not a knock on, I'm just saying they generated opportunities, and even the kind of insinuations they made in that statement, it's not a good look, generally, I think.
Yeah, I always have sympathy for sides that have those many decisions go against them, for sure.
Yeah.
I think we've just got to be quite careful, because it can get quite dangerous. I know it sounds really like, you know, chill out, right? But I think it can.
Yeah.
But Palace beating West Ham 5-2. Great performance by Palace.
They played some gorgeous football. Glasner doing work.
Yeah.
Doing some serious work. Eze and Elise are just elusive as ever. Mateta, gorgeous final goal from him, and the Eze strike of the volley, aerial volley for the second. Palace's second, probably the pick of the goals. Palace own goal, not so distinguished, but the football overall was... It was
a great game,
actually. Yeah. Really impressive. Yeah.
So that's the Premier League.
You look great, Palace.
Arsenal go top. Yeah, Liverpool go second. It. City with a game in hand, a point behind them. Just a quick shout for the WSL. Big wins for Man City, beating West Ham 5-0. Arsenal beating Leicester 3-0. And Man United 2, Spurs 2. Those are the Sunday games. Bristol City losing 1-0 at home to Liverpool, and Brighton losing at home to Everton on Friday, which means that because Chelsea were away playing their Champions League stuff, Man City 3 points clear at the top of the WSL. Chelsea with the game in hand.
And that goal difference too is, hey,
yeah.
City are, yeah.
Shouts to Bunny Shaw, by the way, who got another brace in this game. Came off injured, didn't look great, but haven't seen an update on that yet. But hope she's all good. There are three, apart from Chelsea, we've got three games left in WSL. What's coming up this week, Musa Kwanga? Oh, do you know what we have? We should have done a show on Tuesday.
How so?
Derby della Madonnina tomorrow night. We've got some good Serie A games. Roma against Bologna as well. Sevilla, Mallorca, Borough, Leeds in the Championship. And then you've got the rest of the, we've got some Premier League games coming up, obviously Arsenal Chelsea on Tuesday.
Taste the treats.
So we'll talk about those on Thursday. Alright everyone, we're going to leave it there for today. Don't forget to check the Stadio Archers playlist on Spotify, speaking of which, playing out on a track by Ewa called Pumi. Anything that you would like to add? We saw one.
Nothing further.
Alright mate, safe travels.
May you all be spiritually on side in your personal professional lives this week.
Soon.
So even if injustice calls, be like, I was spiritually on side. I was spiritually on side. Yeah.
Remember everyone, stay spiritually on side.
Absolutely, people.
And celebrate your wins, all your wins, like you've won the league.
Exactly. Absolutely.
All right, everyone, much love. We'll be back with you on Thursday.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.